Okay, so I just wanted to mention a couple of details here as we now go to Aaron Blake, the Washington Post reporter who has joined us before. He is a senior political reporter there. As you know, tomorrow is the anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. This weekend, the president had hoped to secretly meet at Camp David with the group behind those attacks. Time magazine and others are reporting that Vice President Mike Pence, John Bolton, and others advised the president against meeting the Taliban there at Camp David. Fox News says David Petraeus and Lindsey Graham also advised against the meeting. But this is the place where Jimmy Carter got Israel to meet with Egypt. And the president did promise as a candidate to draw down our troops in Afghanistan, getting us from 14,000 to even 8,000 troops is turning out to be harder than he promised. Condoleezza Rice was on CBS this morning, and she said the reliability of the Taliban at the negotiation table was troubled from the get-go. And whatever the numbers are of troops that we have or should have there, she said it's not always bad policy for Americans to be stationed around the world after wars for stabilization. We were in Germany, she reminded everybody, for 45 years after World War II until the wall fell there, and we've helped maintain the peace in the Korean Peninsula since 1953. But the final details of this summit with the Taliban and the president of Afghanistan could not be worked out, and when a car bomb in Afghanistan killed a dozen people, including an American serviceman, the president canceled the meeting, saying, "What kind of people would do something like this?" And my answer to that was, well, the kind of people that will kill 3,000 innocent people on 9/11. It's widely suspected that the explosion gave the president a convenient reason to back away from the talks, that either were going to fail or not happen at all. It makes me also wonder, since generally nobody knew about these talks in the first place, why did he tell us about them being canceled? Shouldn't he have, or could not he have, maybe avoided some of the embarrassment or controversy or anger or who knows what the fallout will be from the Taliban if he had simply said nothing about it at all? And then Bolton's out. Aaron Blake joins us now on WGN Radio to fill in some of the blanks. At least that's how I run up to this thing. Aaron, did I miss anything in my little summary?
Yeah, I think we're all asking ourselves why this was disclosed in the first place, certainly. Also asking ourselves whether this was something that really anybody in the White House, apart from the president, was pushing for. I think that there is a sense, certainly, that people like Bolton and Pence were opposed to it. My big question is how much is the likes of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo pushing for these kinds of things? Certainly, Bolton's exit is a boon to Pompeo, but with Pompeo, you never know how much of his status right now is him actually getting things that he wants, and how much of it he's actually just kind of going along with what the president wants, because he's certainly been willing to do the things that the president wants more than other aides, and that's one of the reasons why he's one of the longest serving members of the president's cabinet.
And maybe one of the reasons Bolton is out. I mean, was it inevitable that Bolton wasn't going to maybe last until the end of the term or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, this was not a marriage made in heaven, and everybody knew that from the moment that the president hired him. If you were to look up the definition of a Republican foreign policy hawk in the dictionary, John Bolton is really the first person you'd think of in that context. And President Trump, of course, ran as mostly a non-interventionist. He's governed largely in that way. He's wanted to negotiate with the North Korean leader, has talked about doing that with Iran, planned to do that with the Taliban. All of this is anathema to pretty much everything John Bolton has been talking about for many years now. And so we all kind of knew that this was going to come to a head one way or another. And it seems like that has ultimately become the case, particularly on this Afghanistan issue, where the president wasn't just ignoring what John Bolton was saying, but was also basically sidelining him and not allowing him to be a part of this process, which is what we're reporting is really what precipitated this difficult relationship finally coming to an end.
Well, was the timing of it the worst? I mean, let's forget about Bolton for a second, although this may been part of his objection. He was actually just more of a hawk, as you said. But, I mean, was the timing of it what maybe was driving Pence and some of the others to advise against meeting with the Taliban at Camp David?
You mean as far as it being the 18th anniversary of 9/11?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's when I first read this story, you know, it made me wonder, you know, that's a big part of maybe making me wonder who actually is pushing for this besides the president. If you are going to hold these kinds of meetings, the idea that you would do it so close to the anniversary of 9/11, I think, is a very questionable political decision. You know, even if you can argue that this is a good opportunity to talk about how long we've been there and things like that, I think that was just a very questionable bit of timing for everybody involved. And you know, maybe that's part of the reason why this was kind of a last straw for Bolton. If you look at what he's been tweeting about over the last 18 hours or so, he's got a couple of tweets, which we've now learned at least one of them came after the president and him talked about dining. So the fact that he's raising up that issue even as his time is coming to an end, I think, is pretty suggestive of the reasons behind this.
Well, I can make the president's argument, right? I mean, imagine the coup and the coup for peace it would have been if on the anniversary of 9/11, he was able to say the troops are coming home. I mean, that was what he campaigned on. So I don't, you know, I this is one instance where I'm very troubled by some of the details, but I think I do see a logical train of thought here, right?
Yeah, I think that's certainly an argument that he could make. But you know, even if they do hold the talks, the idea that they're going to reach some kind of ironclad agreement, you know, after one meeting, I think is a little bit difficult to say. You know, as we've seen with North Korea, these kinds of negotiations tend to be dragged out over time. There are many complex issues involved. And so, you know, the idea that this was going to be solved with one meeting, whether it was secret or not, I think was a really difficult gambit for them to enter into.
Well, the timing notwithstanding, just follow me for a second here. He said he was going to get the troops home. He was going to do better than Obama did. We've got 14,000 there. The target was 8,000, maybe 5,000 they wanted to get down to. And better that we negotiate with our enemies than we fight them. So let's get these people together. Timing notwithstanding, was it such a crazy idea for the president to try and pull this off?
I don't think so, relative to where we were politically a few years ago. I think if there's one thing the president has changed about our politics, it's that the Republican Party especially has warmed to the idea of negotiating with people. Remember back during the 2008 race, many Republicans, and I would add even Hillary Clinton, derided President Obama, then candidate Obama, for talking about how he would meet with the leaders of Iran without any preconditions. Well, just a couple hours ago in the White House, we had the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, say that the president, now President Trump, would in fact meet with Iran without preconditions. And it's not really much of a story anymore. So, you know, I think that everybody's kind of waiting to see what ultimately results from these talks. People are cautiously optimistic, many people are. But we're also seeing the flip side of that with North Korea, which is the idea that perhaps we're just being strung along and that the negotiations themselves are being used by foreign powers to legitimize themselves on the world stage, which was always the risk of this kind of thing in the first place.
Yeah. Well, that just, you know, I try not to go here, Aaron, but every now and then I can't help but wonder, imagine if this was Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton that was going to meet with the Taliban on the anniversary virtually of 9/11. And would Fox News or the Republicans, who so love the American flag and the idea of America first, how would they have handled that? I don't hear much pushback. I was literally looking on the Fox News site today, and they didn't seem to be as interested in this topic as I'll bet they would have been if this was Hillary or Barack.
I don't think that there's any question that the reaction would be different. And I've thought about that about many occurrences during the Trump presidency. Certainly, there are plenty of double standards in politics to go around, but I think this particular instance is maybe the best encapsulation of how that reaction would be significantly different.
Well, it's funny you say encapsulation, because some people are saying, if I can just segue to a slightly different topic here for a minute with you, some people say that Sharpiegate is the perfect encapsulation of the president, because it's a self-inflicted wound. It's him punching back harder than is necessary. At the end of the day, all he was trying to do was warn Alabama. He had bad information, or maybe he knew it was bad, but he just wanted to be the guy who was warning people and letting everybody know he was there to protect him. He was the president. He loves that role. He loves putting on the USA hat and sitting at a conference table and projecting that he's the protector in chief. So at the end of the day, the only thing he screwed up was he had bad information. But talk about a perfect summary of this presidency. It's not the crime, it's the lie about the crimes that gets you in trouble. And if I understand correctly, the National Weather Service in Birmingham put out a message 20 minutes after, on September 1st, he warned America that Alabama could get hit, and the National Weather Service said that's not going to happen. And then long after the hurricane leaves, NOAA, the parent organization for the Weather Service, said, well, actually, the president was operating with some legitimate information. And as soon as I heard that, I thought, I'll bet somebody in the administration got in NOAA's ear. And lo and behold, they report to the Commerce Department, and you guys are reporting that the Commerce Secretary is now being looked at for pushing this notion.
Yeah, it's really a great little microcosm of kind of a small piece of information that probably isn't that significant in the scheme of things. I mean, it would have been, if the president had said somebody was safe and they were actually in danger, that would actually be pretty dangerous. But as the reverse of that, he was saying people that were safe were actually in danger. So there wasn't risk of people, you know, having a false sense of security or something like that.
Right.
And then it's just kind of been drawn out over the course of the last week plus here. And then when you start talking about pressure potentially being applied on government agencies that generally don't engage in partisan political issues, that's a whole different thing, and that's where things start to get more problematic. So we're all still reporting this out, trying to figure out whether the White House was involved in this. Certainly there have been times when these kinds of agencies have simply felt like they needed to toe the line. Other times there has been more of a direct actual effort to get them to toe that line, but this is something that has turned into be something rather serious, when in the first case it wasn't all that serious to begin with.
Right, because what's serious is trust. I mean, imagine it was something other than a hurricane that actually didn't hurt anybody in the United States of America. Bahamas devastated. But I mean, imagine if it was something more serious to Americans than that. You can't trust these people about frivolous stuff like a weather map, let alone something that really would be more consequential. I mean, I know that's obvious, but isn't that the most important takeaway?
Yeah, and that's why we're seeing the reaction from certain elements of the NOAA and the National Weather Service talking about how important this is. The chief scientist from NOAA, we reported yesterday, is looking into this, is investigating what happened here. He said that this was dangerous because it does cut into the idea that these weather services can be trusted. And that they're not being politicized. So I think there are a lot of people in that industry, especially, who feel very strongly that this was over the line, and they want to see some accountability for that. And I would add, the head of NOAA spoke earlier today at the annual meeting of the National Weather Service, which just by sheer coincidence happens to be in Alabama. Yeah. And he didn't really back away from that statement. He kind of offered a very kind of middle ground comment on that. So I would be I'm watching to see how the meteorological community and other people at NOAA and NWS are going to respond to that, because he didn't exactly stand by them in the way they probably would have hoped he did.
So now you're confused. As an American, should I trust the Weather Service, NOAA, the president? Where am I to go? And my advice to the president, and I don't think he's listening, but were he to be, I would say, we'll figure it out. Let the weather people do the weather. And even though your intentions are good, don't even go there. Let them handle this. Aaron Blake is a senior political reporter for the Washington Post. Always a pleasure to talk to you, Aaron. Keep doing what you guys do over there.
I'll try. Thank you very much.